Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. Tate Duryea here with Passive Income Pilots. Before you start this episode, a quick update. Quest Trust has been acquired by Inspira Financial. Just wanted to give that update to reduce any confusion since Quest Trust is still in the show notes. This was one of the best episodes that we've ever had in terms of explaining how self-directed retirement accounts work. So we definitely wanted to keep it live, but wanted to give you that little update so that you're not confused if you're looking around for Quest Trust. Enjoy the show.
I don't think that the Roth or the traditional is necessarily better. I think you really have to look at multiple things. A, your age. What do you think your rate of return is going to be? What is your tax bracket now and later on? And once you put all those together, that will help you determine which IRA is going to be better for you, traditional or Roth, or tax deferred or tax free.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll. Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. I'm your host, Tate Duryea, here with my good buddy, Ryan Gibson. How you doing? It's another week.
Good, Tate. Good to see you. Good to be back on the show talking about IRA investing, because this is one of the things that I think investors need a lot of information and education on.
Definitely.
And we're here to provide it, and not only provide it, but also give very applicable knowledge. So if you're thinking about how do I invest in my retirement account, you've come to the right place.
And again, you know, Ryan and I know a bunch about this stuff, but we're not going to sit here and act like the experts. We brought on Derek Long from Quest IRA. The guy's incredible. He's one of the best educators that I've ever come in contact with on the IRA space.
Yeah. And if you want somebody who's actually going to Congress and talking about this and working with our government on how these programs work, he's the guy that does that. He's also soloed. So he's a pilot.
That's right.
He'll tell you. Yep. Yeah. So Derek Long is really heads up things at Quest Trust Company. He's kind of the spokesperson there. He's a spokesperson on Capitol Hill for IRA investing. So without further ado, we're going to jump right in and show you how you can set up an IRA and all the ins and outs. Let's get to the show.
Let's get to it. Derek, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate having you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm super excited. I love you guys. I really do.
Well, Derek, most of my investors use Quest as their self-directed IRA custodian. And we go way back. And today's episode is going to be all about how to use your self-directed retirement account to invest in alternatives, specifically real estate, i.e. if you're looking to convert an old dusty 401k or IRA into a self-directed retirement account to invest with Tate in Turbine Capital deals or in Spartan Investment Group in our self-storage deals or any other deals that you want to do, and to include your own deals, we're going to go into how to do that, how to set it up. And I'm excited to have you on the show because you are the expert on this. I know that you've even gone to Capitol Hill and testified and helped shape some regulations on this. So
I do, yes. I do it actually every quarter now, which is crazy.
Wow, that's great. You get to spend time in Capitol Hill. I love it. So, well, we're so honored and privileged to have you here. Why don't we just go ahead and get started with just a basic question, which is just what is a self-directed IRA and what is it not?
Sure. Well, everything, and you nailed it. I do work for Quest Trust Company, but as Ryan said, guys, you can take everything I'm talking about to the bank and apply it to any self-directed custodian out there. So nothing's going to change no matter who you choose to work with. So I always start off, I tell people, self-directed IRAs are fake. They're made up. It's a marketing term. They do not exist. So why is it we use that terminology? Honestly, it comes down to the custodian and what they allow you to invest in. If I have a retirement account and my retirement account sits at a company like Fidelity, Fidelity will only let me invest in stocks, bonds, CDs, mutual funds, right? Well, if I have that same IRA at what we call a self-directed custodian, someone like Quest, you know, well, we will only you let you invest in things like Spartan Investments, right? Only let you invest in things like Turbine Capital. We do not let you invest in like Apple stock. So don't think that one is better than the other. It's just different. Notice on the Fidelity side, they actually have investments for you. They'll sell you an annuity, sell you a mutual fund. Whereas self-directed custodians, you found someone like Ryan, you found someone like Tate to sit here and actually walk you through an investment. So that's, you need to have a custodian that will allow you to do that. So we call it self-directed, Brian, but it's just a marketing term. If you actually read the IRS revenue code, you'll never see anything in there that states self-directed. The IRS does not recognize that term.
Yeah, and so like this is making this applicable to a pilot who is at the airlines, at their major right now. Maybe they just got hired by a major airline. They can't use their Fidelity account or their T. Rowe Price account to invest, to be a self-directed account because they're employed. But this is great for a pilot who is got like an old IRA or 401k, I should say, at a regional or a previous airline. Maybe they work for another major cargo carrier or something like that. It's just sitting there. They haven't done anything with it. They can roll that into a self-directed IRA with Quest Trust Company and help them diversify into things like alternatives, like real estate, like Spartan Turbine. So is that kind of my understanding?
That's correct. So I always tell people if it's an active 401k or an active TSP or anything along those lines, meaning I still work for that employer, you guys, you can't touch those funds until you quit, fired, retire, lost your job, whatever you want to call it. All right. So ignore that money. But external money from an old employer, you just left the military, or maybe, right, you switched airlines, like you said, well, that's an old TSP, an old 401k. We can use that money and actually self-direct it. And I always say invest in the things that maybe you're more familiar with outside of stocks and mutual funds. Invest in those things that I like to label as a tangible asset, something I can go touch, you know, feel, see, look at. So,
Derek, can you walk us through exactly what you can put in an IRA? Because this is always a surprising list.
Yeah, so it's actually anything almost, except for two main things. One being life insurance contracts and collectibles, and they define collectibles as alcoholic beverages and paintings. So I can't use my IRA right. And invest in booze. Sorry, guys. Probably a different meeting for you. But yeah. Outside of that, dude, you can invest into anything. You really can. We see people invest in small business and startup companies to single-family homes. Like they use their IRA and they buy an Airbnb or they buy a rental. To sometimes they're investing into syndications, and this is a lot of what you guys do, where they put their IRA's name on a subscription agreement, and that's what they're doing. So it's honestly just about anything. You just need to have someone knowledgeable that can walk you through that process and understand your investment.
That's great. Yeah, when I left my regional airline, that's what I did. I had a 401k through T. Rowe Price, and I actually initially went to Morgan Stanley, did my own separate managed or tax, you know, tax-free account, whatever, mm-hmm. with them. And then when I learned about this, I rolled it into a self-directed IRA and I used it to invest in alternatives. So great, great option for things like that. I know many, many pilots that have come by and they're like, I really want to diversify into your offerings. How do I do it? And then I say, well, talk to me about what you have. And they'll say, well, I want to use my Fidelity account. I'm like, well, you can't do that. You're actively working at Delta or wherever you're at. And they say, but I got my 401k from like Atlas Airlines, you know, and I haven't done anything with that. Well, perfect. That's exactly what you can use to kind of, because you've left that place of employment and you can use, you know, things like that. Or if you've quit somewhere and you've kind of put your money, you know, outside of the employer's plan, then that you can use that cash as well. So
I'm going to hire you, Ryan. You want to come work for me?
Sure. I feel like I do. I feel like I'm at the Quest Trust Company's office quite a bit, actually. You guys. Yeah. Host us for some meetups and happy hours, and you guys are always doing great events down there. So in Houston, so it's great.
I love it.
Well, and I think it's important also, guys, to recognize that, you know, we're talking about rollovers so often because IRAs have such minuscule yearly contribution limits,
yep.
right? So, Derek, can you talk to us about like if you don't have anything to roll, it can take a long time to sort of build up. An IRA that's big enough to go and invest in, say, a syndication deal with the minimums that are associated with those.
Yeah, so we get money into a retirement account three different ways. One, through a contribution. And this is the most common way what people think of. This is you taking money from your checking account and moving it into that retirement account. That is the only thing that there is a limit on, right? There is never a limit on how much you can earn or convert from one retirement account to another. So that's the other two ways to get money in there is through conversions, right? Moving money from retirement account to retirement account, or earnings, right? I do a good investment and I earn a whole bunch of money. So there is never a limit on those things. There's only a limit on what you personally can contribute. Now, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you have zero retirement accounts and you're setting up your first IRA ever, the max contribution is actually kind of skewed. It's either $6,500 or $7,500, right? Plus 25% of your self-employed income. You combine those two numbers, that's the amount you can contribute. Now, the reason I bring that up is a lot of CPAs will actually get this wrong, actually about 99% of them. They only tell you that first limit of that dollar figure, that $6,500. They don't mention that you can actually contribute also 25% of your self-employed income because they don't want to sit there and calculate it, which is really sad. So ask me, call me, and we can actually go through those motions. But you can shovel in a decent amount if you do it right. So does that help?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the steps really quick. So, you know,
Ryan, before we jump to the steps, could we just talk about self-employment income? Sure. So for a typical airline pilot, what would that look like in order to have self-employment income? Would somebody have to be driving Uber on the side?
Sure. That could work, right? I'm going to assume that not too many airline pilots out there are doing some sort of Ubering. Okay.
Usually not.
No, but you are probably making money outside of the airlines already, long before they talk to you guys. I know a lot of airline pilots and stuff, they will start to already put money in a brokerage account and have stocks in there, and they will earn a dividend from those stocks sometimes. Well, that can actually be considered self-employment income, right? They probably already own a rental property because they've already tried to diversify on their own going through something like that before ever speaking with you guys to invest in Turbine Capital, you know? Well, in those cases, any income they're making outside of where they currently work can be considered self-employment income. And a lot of times we don't think about that. Honestly,
right.
Me leaving money in a savings account, putting it in a mutual fund, I can take the earnings from a mutual fund. That can be my self-employment income. So we just need to, then we can contribute a portion of that. So most of these guys out there, you're not sitting in your bank account dead broke. You saved up a bunch of money and you're investing it somewhere. Let's take those earnings and label it differently.
Understood. All right, Ryan, I know you're dying to jump in and ask about the steps to set this stuff up.
Yeah, no. So, you know, I always get these requests, right? Like, okay, so what do I do? Right? Where do I start? I've got this pile of cash. And I guess I'll first ask, with how long does it take? If I had an old dusty 401k at a previous employer, how long is it going to take me to convert it to give money to syndication?
So no matter which custodian you go with, setting up the IRA, the self-directed IRA, is actually fairly simple. It should take somewhere right around 48 hours, maybe less at some other custodians. I know we do it fairly quickly, okay? But setting up the account, even though it's simple, and all it is a basic application, name, social, date of birth, who inherits the account when you pass away, and a signature. Boom, you'll have a self-directed IRA quickly. Moving the money from an old employer plan is going to take about 2 weeks. So we got to figure out what to do in those 2 week time frames, because you don't want anything holding up your investments. Very rarely are we making a decision within a 2 week time frame on what we're investing in. That's usually a great time to fill out the paperwork, do the due diligence, those type of things. So while you wait for that money to come from that 401k, that TSP, that old pension plan, that's when you need to be filling out all of your investment paperwork. So that way, when the money does come over, it can be sent right out for your investment. There is no holding period. So that's usually the best option right there. So don't just, okay, well, I requested the money, now I'll sit and wait for it to show up. No, use that time, that window that you have, that you're waiting on money to arrive. And what's really, go ahead.
What do they typically have to do with their old plan provider? Do they have to call them and just say, hey, I'm liquidating this? Do they send them some forms? What do they do to get that money out?
Yeah. So if it's an employer plan, such as a 401k or a TSP, yeah, you got to call, right? You got to call that 1-800 number and say, hey, but you want to be very specific with your language. And this is the key. If I say I want to move my 401k, I want to transfer my 401k, or I want to roll over my 401k. All three of these are different. Two of them create taxation and one of them doesn't. So I always think this is funny because the person you're talking to on the phone, I promise you they're not an expert. Don't be mad at them. They assume that you're the expert. So you said, oh, I want to transfer my 401k. They pull out their book and they turn to the transfer page and they walk you through the transfer process. Well, that's not what you want to do. You want to say, I want to roll over my 401k to an IRA. They turn to the rollover page. They'll walk you through the rollover process. And that is the correct terminology to utilize. And during that process, then nothing will be mistaken. So if you ever hear these horror stories where money took forever to come, it's because someone said the wrong thing. And you have to understand, verbiage is key, especially when you're moving retirement accounts. And it's sad because I hear tax attorneys mix this up. I've seen people say the wrong thing in a court case and have it be completely misconstrued by both parties. So,
man, this is gold.
That is gold, by the way. And you say rollover. So now what? What are they going to typically give you? Some forms to fill out?
So this depends on where the money sits, but usually the form will be maybe a 1 or 2 pager that's very basic. And if it looks confusing to you, send it to your IRA custodian. 99% of the time, like, I can fill that out for you and then just have you sign it because I know what the verbiage is. I know what they're looking for, you know? So if you get this big, ugly, long packet, then don't worry. Just send it to your custodian, ask them to help you fill it out. It should be very basic. The reason it...
Okay. No, you're good. Go ahead.
I was saying the reason it takes so long, by banking regulations, this comes from the Department of Labor. They have to cut a check and throw it in the mail. What the hell? Why can't they send an ACH or a wire in today's day? The Department of Labor requires all custodians to cut a check and throw it in the mail. Like, that's why it takes so long.
How is it, though, that I've had an investor invest in our project, and it was like, we talked to them on Thursday. They're like, oh, we're setting up our retirement account with Quest, and then they funded it on Monday. How did that happen?
So Everything we just mentioned was because the client in question probably had an old 401k, right? This is an old employer plan. But if you already have an IRA, I get to do all the work, right? So so much easier on you guys. You fill out my form with me over the phone, right? I have you sign some things, and then I'm the one that has to call that 1-800 number. I'm the one that gets to go through all those motions. And when it's from an IRA to an IRA, they are allowed to send a wire. They are allowed to send an ACH. So like you were saying, it's way faster if it's already in an IRA.
So this was actually my next question, because we're talking about a lot about old dusty 401ks, because a lot of the times, that's where pilots have access to money, right? Mm-hmm. We all flew at the regionals at one time or another, and we have these old dusty 401k plans that we may or may not have rolled into our current airline. And by the way, if you already did roll it into your current airline, game's over. There's no getting it back out. So this has to be done before you rolled your old plan into your current plan. But yeah, I want to talk about IRA to IRA, because if you have an IRA, you know, at Fidelity or Schwab or one of these places, you can roll that IRA into a self-directed IRA, or as you said, that term doesn't really exist, but to a custodian, roll it to a custodian who actually can facilitate alternative investments, self-directed investments like that.
That's correct. And that is the easy one. Oh man. And your custodian should be working hard for you, whichever one you choose. Like, I'm biased, guys. I work for Quest, but I'm telling you, everything we're talking about today, you can take to any self-directed custodian you choose to work with, okay? But note that your custodian should be working for you when it comes to that step, because they're the ones that have to actually make the request. You fill out their forms, and you put the ball back in someone else's court. It makes it so much easier.
Question for you.
Sure.
If I have an IRA, and let's say I have $500,000 in it, do I have to roll the whole thing over?
No. Matter of fact, you should. A good tax attorney or a good financial advisor would tell you to only move the amount that you want to invest. So if I wanted to invest right now in Turbine Capital and I chose to invest $100,000, you know, with you, which is pretty standard for one of your subscription agreements, well, then I'm probably just going to transfer over $100,000, maybe $101,000 to cover fees for several years or something like that. But you shouldn't need to move over anymore. I know, like Quest, we don't make you keep any cash in your account, so there is no cash minimum. Some custodians do, but even the ones that do, it should be pretty minimal. We're talking a couple hundred bucks. So this is good for you guys because you shouldn't be moving over the full balance unless that is what you're investing.
And that's important to know because it's important to know that you can have multiple IRAs.
Yes. Not only can you, you should. Every custodian out there specializes in something else, and you don't want to have the Walmart-style custodian that can do it all. You go to Walmart, you get Walmart prices. You get Walmart, though, customer service, and you get Walmart quality, right? So some custodians out there are really good with trading stocks. Prime example, if you've ever had to buy and sell stocks on a daily basis, Fidelity actually has a great brokerage program that deals with that. Charles Schwab sucks at it. They do. But Charles Schwab is great when it comes to annuities and mutual funds. Quest, we're great when it comes to real estate style assets. That's what we specialize in. Don't call me to do gold and silver. I can refer you to another company that can. But to have good diversification, you should have accounts actually at multiple places because every custodian can specialize in something different.
That's like, I've never heard that before. That is really big advice. Like have your Quest Trust Company custodian for real estate syndications, have your Fidelity custodian for, you know, day trading if you're doing that. I'm not advocating you do that, but and then maybe
I suck at it.
I don't know when I would actually do it because I don't even know if I have time to do it. But yeah, so set up different modality, like different vehicles for your different things because there is a better platform. Like don't go set up a Quest Trust Company if you're just going to day trade because you're going to fail, right? Yeah. But it's really good for that's a really good advice. So is there any other things like you said day trading, maybe Fidelity would be good for that, but like what other custodians maybe have a specialization that you could recommend?
Sure. So there's actually a company called Bitcoin IRA. Guess what? Okay. They're fantastic if you want to do cryptocurrency. Okay. Who knew? You know? Okay. There's a company called Gold Star Trust. They are great when it comes to if you want to use your IRA and purchase precious metals. They actually have a contract with the IRS that stores the metals for you in a government-style vault, which keeps you 100% in compliance. You know, so that's actually very important because depending on what you want to invest in, that's where you should be going. Quest, we're known as the real estate experts, you know? Yeah. So I think of us like a Chick-fil-A. You go to Chick-fil-A, you're going to get a piece of chicken. Don't come at me for a burger, man. You know, that's silly. Oh,
come on, you're higher end than that. You're higher.
You're definitely higher end than that. Well, Derek, I've got a question for you because I can hear the pilot's gears turning as we're talking here. They're going, okay, so if I can have 10 IRAs, that means I can put $65,000 a year into my IRAs, right?
I wish. You know,
and that's not the case.
Yeah. So when we talk about contribution limits, these limits are put in place by Congress and then solidified by the IRS. So they don't care how many retirement accounts you have. They look at all your retirement accounts actually as one. They really do.
Right.
So just because I set up multiple IRAs doesn't mean I can max out the contributions to every single one of them. So you are still stuck to that same amount that we mentioned earlier.
Excellent. Before we get off the topic of rollovers, can we talk a little bit about TSPs? You know, Turbine Capital has a lot of military men and women who invest with us and a lot of military aviators who are in the process of transferring to the airlines. And they all have TSPs that I'm sure they're wondering if they can roll into a self-directed IRA and participate in some of these alternatives and real estate.
Sure. So while you're active, okay, if you know you're really considering this and you're active duty and you go to your S1 and S2 companies, use your CAT card. You can already start the process in rolling over your TSP to an IRA while you're still active when you're going through your out processing service, right? And this is so nice because since you're physically there in your S2 departments, then they will easily walk you through this. However, a lot of you out there are listening to this and you no longer have that CAT card. That's okay. If you don't have it, if you want to roll over a TSP, you have to fill out what they call is a TSP 99 form. And it's very basic. I can walk you through it step by step. That's actually what I had to do because I didn't move out my retirement plan when I left the Army before anything else. So it's an easy form. Once again, anyone can help you fill it out. But once you fill out that TSP 99 form, you give it back to the VA. The VA will take 6 weeks on average because it's the VA, and then they'll process it. So it's the best way to do it. So if you can do it while you're still active, while you're still doing what they call your offboarding process, and you have your CAT card, easiest thing to do then because you're physically there, and then you don't have to fill out additional forms. So
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
When is using an IRA to invest in real estate a bad idea?
I actually see it a lot. It's usually when you get the guy that's anxious and he hasn't done any due diligence. So you guys both actually offer a great service, right? From Spartan and Turbine Capital. I can take my money. I can have due diligence on you guys individually, and I can invest in you. And then I can see what my money does to get some better education. Unfortunately, I see a lot of people take a different approach. And they go, I don't need Ryan. I don't need Tate. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go take my money. I'm going to go invest over here and buy this property. And then they go and buy it. They get themselves way over cumbersome. They don't know what they're doing. They've never experienced it themselves. So what they happen to do is they start pulling out their own credit card. They start trying to supply different funds, and they start mixing and matching capital. I see this all the time. And if the IRS catches you doing that, you get in trouble. So I always say, man, before you just jump into something, make sure you fully understand the steps. And that's why I like to see people invest in groups like you guys, is because it can help alleviate so much of that stress.
Yeah, and pulling on that thread a little bit more, Derek is talking about is, you're going to go buy a $100,000 rental house with your IRA, and you have $100,001 in your IRA account, and you buy that house, and all of a sudden you need a $20,000 roof. You can't infuse the cash later on to put the roof on.
Right.
You've got to use IRA money because now you're mixing and matching. So just, there's a lot of rules around what you can do with your IRA when you're doing your own deals. What other trip points or hazards are there in that?
You know, I always tell people to, if you're doing any investments into any syndication, all right, don't let the syndicator scare you if they're uneducated, and they'll use a term called UBIT. Don't let that freak you out, all right? That's actually the wrong terminology. It's really called UDFI, and that's something completely different. But a lot of times what you want to do is just make sure you're talking to a good IRA specialist or someone that's knowledgeable in these areas. And I love to work with pilots, and I love to work with ex-military. I really do. There's some other terminology out there like that as well. You could hear things like prohibited transactions and disqualified people and all these other things. If you don't know what is being said, call the IRA specialist. At a very basic level, someone should be able to sit down and explain to you each step of the way and walk you through what it is. Because a lot of this verbiage, especially as we get out of there, think of it like the first time you did your solo. I remember my first solo. I knew exactly what to say to the tower. Cessna 1634 Delta, taking the active runway 19er. You're going to be doing touch and goes. Get out there. My pilot instructor jumps out and says, good luck. I have no clue what the hell to say. I forgot it all. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And this is very common. Don't freak out like that. Call us. Call your IRA specialist. If there's any verbiage you don't understand, or if there's something you're worried about, because many times it's something that you don't need to be worried about.
And speaking of calling your IRA specialist, this is something that why we love working with you guys. You don't have a phone tree, right? So when we call Quest, someone actually picks up the phone?
That's correct. So we don't use an automated system. You can call right now,
right,
and someone's going to pick up the phone. And I think that's so rare in today's day and age. It really is. It's one of those things I think a lot of financial style institutions have lost.
Yeah.
And it's really sad because many times you just don't know what to do. And if you're really thinking about it from a customer service standpoint, everyone hates the press one for this, two for that. It doesn't matter like who you're calling. So.
No, that's a great point. You know, I've heard this marketing term IRA approved or IRAs approved for this investment. Can we like debunk this?
Debunk
BS.
IRAs are approved no matter what, guys. They really are. So I like to describe it this way. Once your custodian sets you up a self-directed IRA, remember that's just a marketing term, but we're going to go and set one up. When you set one up at a company like Quest, your IRA is considered its own entity. It will have its own name, its own address, its own tax ID number, even its own level of asset protection. Now, if I found an investment, right, Well, I go through all the same motions, right? I find the house, I make an offer, I might work with my agent and the title company, I work with the bank if it's going to be debt leveraged. But when I read the buyer's name on the contract, it's not my name, it's my IRA's name. It's not my social, it's my IRA's tax ID number. Notice nothing changes for you as an investor. If I want to invest with Spartan, right, I fill out my subscription agreement. I don't put my name on there as the investor. Ryan's seen this a million times. It's the IRA's name, right? It's the IRA's address, but it's still you filling it out. It's still your account. All it is just, and someone will be there to hold your hand if you have questions with this, but your IRA can do it. Remember, it can't invest in life insurance and it can't invest in alcohol. Like, so.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And that was another thing I just wanted to clarify too. If you go onto our investor dashboard to invest in one of our offerings, you'll see you put your, there's a profile, right? So you have a profile for Ryan Gibson, you have a profile for Ryan Gibson Trust, and then maybe you have a profile for Quest IRA number 123456. And so that's actually the name that goes on the subscription agreement. So there's a little bit of a different process to make sure that your custodian has titled your subscription agreement correctly so that your investment is titled correctly with your IRA name. You don't put your personal name on there or anything like that. So
that's correct. That's correct.
I've seen things though, like syndications say like your IRA, like IRAs are approved for this investment. Is there a scenario where like a syndication wouldn't accept an IRA or?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Right. And, it's one of two things. One, it's when a syndicator doesn't want to deal with IRAs. Now, if they don't want to deal with IRAs, which should be a red flag, it's due to something that's called plan asset regulations. And pretty much it says that, hey, look, if you raise too much capital from IRAs, then we're going to put you in a different category. You got to file different forms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, most of the time you'll see this when it's non-accredited investors, something that's not 506C approved. You'll see this with 506B and anything else that's not, you know, maybe for a creditor, maybe something that wasn't filed properly with the SEC. This is also why we like working with groups like you guys, because that's not a problem, right? You guys have your proper offerings. You guys have your accredited investors. And I'm not saying there's not other ways for people to invest if they're not accredited. However, it is very unique to see that when people say, oh, we don't want that, it's because they know IRS actually takes IRA investing very seriously. They don't like to see people take advantage of someone's entire life savings. And you might not think about it that way, but average person, they've been saving up in that retirement account for 10, 20, sometimes 30 years. You know, if someone took advantage of it and they took all your retirement account money because they had this fantastic deal, so they didn't file with the SEC or something, like that could be very dangerous.
Yeah.
Let's talk about tax season.
Love it.
So I do generate a K-1 for all my investors on a deal. They get a tax reporting. What with an IRA K-1?
Yeah. So normally if I personally did an investment with either one of you guys, right? Well, then on that K-1, it shows my social security number on there as the investor. So in most of the cases, and Ryan, I'm really familiar with yours. So like if we look up in section 3, you usually for the first few years will give me a big negative number. This is good. I get to take this negative number and I subtract it from my taxes I owe that year. Okay. So don't be freaked out when you see that, oh, you lost a bunch of money. This is good. That's all tax deduction for you. Okay. Yeah,
episode 10, right? Episode 10 or 14?
10 and 14. 10 and 14. Yeah.
We can talk all about.
So very common. Okay. But the reason I have this big negative number and the reason I took that big negative number as a tax deduction is I, as an individual, am a taxpayer. Same scenario using the IRA. The IRA is technically tax exempt. We actually read the definition. It's a tax exempt trust. So that big negative number doesn't mean anything. You'll see the IRA's tax ID number on there. This means that the IRA is already tax exempt. When it receives the profit, there is no taxes owed unless you have to file UDFI. Now, what's funny is we can talk about that maybe in a different area, or if you guys want, we can now. Very rarely do either of your guys' investments actually ever occur any type of UDFI taxation or UBIT taxation. If you hear that, call me. The CPA calculated it wrong.
How would you know? If you got a K-1, where would you look and where would you see it?
As far as if there was UBIT or UDFI?
Yeah.
Honestly, you wouldn't even know until most of the time, unless you actually ask the syndicator.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So what it means is that the syndicator took debt to build the asset. So if someone's raising $10 million, they're probably only raising $3 million. They're borrowing $7 million from the bank. Well, if I use my IRA, the IRS says my IRA indirectly borrowed that money from the bank. So they want you to pay a taxation now and all this other stuff. But when you go through those motions, if you look at all the negative numbers you got up there on the K-1, it will offset all the taxation that is owed. Most cases, if there is something owed, you're talking a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, so I want to crack that nut right there because I've heard people say, oh, well, for IRA accounts, I'm not giving any depreciation to IRA accounts. I'm going to give it more of it to the cash investors. And they're like, Ryan, why don't you guys do that? I'm like, because the IRA investors still need that depreciation, right?
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah. Right. So that's a huge misnomer out there, I think, thinking that the IRAs don't need the depreciation. Absolutely do.
Yep. Yeah. And
if there's debt on the project, right? If you're reinvesting in a syndication that is using no leverage, then of course you wouldn't be subject to any of that.
That's correct. And there's some syndications out there that will use a C corp instead that you would actually invest in. You'll see that more often in the oil and gas industry, but those don't have any debt on them either. Then, you know, or even if they do debt, the IRA doesn't have to worry about it. But long story short, I like to think of it this way: is the IRS gave you an entity that avoids all taxation on all investments. So if you're using that amount of money right here and doing any investments, no problem. But if this entity is going to borrow money and make a whole bunch of money, well, they're going to tax you to the percentage of debt leverage.
Right.
Well, if they're taxing you, now the IRA gets to claim all those deductions you mentioned earlier. And in most syndications, there's enough deductions in year 1 through 3 that will offset all that UDFI tax.
What's the history there? What's the why behind UDFI? Why do they care if things are leveraged? Do you have the kind of the preamble to that?
Sure. So now you're really testing me. Okay.
Sorry.
UDFI actually was created in 1974 via the ERISA Act. Okay. And it originally was actually not even designed for IRAs. It was designed for churches. What would happen is I could start a church, AKA at that point in time is really a cult, right? There was cults that were kind of being developed and all their profit was tax exempt. And then they would actually run like a coffee shop. Well, suddenly this cult, right, or this church was running this coffee shop and they could sell their coffee at a cheaper rate than Dunkin' Donuts. So Dunkin' Donuts got pissed and they said, hey, well, in this specific case right here, you they can't. That's unfair. They have an unfair advantage. IRS looked into it, and sure enough, they did. So they said, hey, if you're using a non-taxable entity such as a church, right, and you're using it for unintended purposes, we're going to tax you just on that money. That seems fair. Well, then it evolved further and further and further to like, hey, look, I mean, it applies the same thing if you borrow money. If a nonprofit organization, if a church, if a charity, a hospital, schools, all of them have some form of UBIT or UDFI pretty consistently. We never think about it that way, but your IRA files the same tax return a church does. It's a 990T.
Excellent.
I'm a dork, man.
One of the ways that I sort of have come to understand this is that you can't trade on margin in an IRA account, right? You can't buy options. Is that true?
Nah.
Inside of an IRA or no?
No, it's
like if you were buying Microsoft stock, you can't, you need the cash to buy 100% of the Microsoft stock, right?
That's
in order for it to be tax exempt. You can't borrow 80% of the purchase price of that stock and then fund it with 20% equity and then keep all the gains.
Sort of. So it's not 100% true.
Let's clarify that because that's how I came to understand UDFI and UBIT was you know, if you can't borrow money inside of an IRA and then keep all the gains, the IRS says, well, sure, you can do that in a self-directed IRA, but the gains that are attributed to the debt, we're going to tax you.
Yep. Yeah. So the way I like the way you described it, I just want to change one term in there is it's not illegal. It's not prohibited. It's not something that you can't do, right? It's something that if you do
right
on that, then you have that extra additional taxation. So the reason I like to define that differently is only because if I have to pay taxes on an investment, that shouldn't deter me from doing an investment.
Right.
Right? Like, so
it means it was a good investment.
Yeah, right. So that's the thing is sometimes when people hear these terms, right, that UBIT, that UDFI, that extra tax that they may owe. So who cares? If you do the investment personally, you owe taxes, bro. Like, right. What's the difference? So that's the biggest thing is if we go through these motions, we want to always think about, like, is it something that's really considered prohibited? Or is it something that's just, hey, you might have to do some extra filing or get some extra education on? There's nothing wrong with, you know, the IRA borrowing money or fractionalizing things like that out. Nothing wrong with it.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Last question. This has been extremely informative. I learned a ton on this episode, so thank you. Investing in something that you benefit from. So, like, I'm going to use my IRA to buy a vacation rental, but I'm just going to go hang out at the vacation rental and not really rent it out.
I hear that a lot.
It's a good one to touch on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you the investor answer and then I'm going to give you the IRS answer. IRS, hey, don't do it.
Yeah. Don't do that. But
pretty much it comes back to that taxable and non-taxable entity. You can never use your non-taxable entity to give you the taxable entity a benefit, period. I can't use my IRA, buy myself a house and live in it. No, that's not an investment. That's a homestead. I can't use my IRA and lend me money to start a business. Why would I pay myself back? That doesn't make any sense, right? So that was the original rule. Well, people get smart. Well, I'm not going to buy me a house. I'll buy my wife a house, right? Nope. And she's what we call disqualified as well. Well, that's okay. I'm not doing that. I'm not lending me money. I'm lending my LLC money. Nope. Can't do that either, guys. Like, there's a clear list and it breaks it down to you, your spouse, your parents, your kids, their spouses. And here's the kicker, their companies. So I can't ever use my IRA to actually invest into one of those key people. But that's okay. Most of the time, that's not what you're trying to do. Right? You're not trying to use your IRA and buy a homestead. That's not what you're trying to do.
Yeah. So I heard this. We both will be a Tate really want to jump in. So just so their listeners know, we've got this hand signal thing going on where, like, we're always like trying to jump in and we're not trying to step on each other. So we like raise our hands here. You can't see it if you're listening, but it's really funny. Anyway, so, okay, so I heard this crazy story and I think about it almost weekly. I don't know, maybe daily. So I heard, and again, we're not giving tax, legal, or investment advice on this podcast. We're just having friendly conversation. But I heard of a story where there was somebody who went and bought an Airbnb or a rental property with their IRA.
Very normal.
Waited till age 59 and a half and then made a distribution from their IRA, which was that vacation rental, as gifting the property to them as the taxable entity. Is that a thing?
We see that every day, but it's not a giftable. So I'm going to change that up.
Distribution. It's a
distribution. Okay. So ultimately, we have two types of retirement accounts, a tax-deferred one. This is very common. This is what most of you guys have. This is your 401k, your TSP, your traditional IRA. Then you have another one. You have a sweet one. That's the Roth IRA.
The Roth.
Right? Now, remember, if you guys don't know the difference, tax deferred, I get to any income I make, I'm deferring taxes until I'm old. The Roth IRA, though, we call post-tax, which a lot of people refer to as tax-free, but it just means all the income made is after tax. So if I have a Roth IRA, I use a Roth IRA, I purchase an Airbnb, I let it appreciate in value, I rent it out consistently, you know, and all this stuff, and I get to 60 years old, I say, you know what? I want to live in that house. you can absolutely do a distribution of that property and have it be 100% tax-free. Not a problem. But if you do that in the traditional IRA, you have to have the property valued, usually by an appraiser, and properties only increase in value. So during that process, unfortunately, what ends up happening is the you owe taxes now on all this on this property, but you never got any cash. It looks like you took a distribution of cash, but you really didn't. This distribution
that is so amazing.
Of cash.
I always think about, like, I want to buy a cabin or a rental property or whatever, but like, I don't really want to use it now. But like, maybe when I retire, I want to move there, and so I want to benefit economically from it today. Maybe have it as a property in the future. So anyway, I just thought that was such a creative way of having a really fun retirement account. Like, yeah, cash is fun, but like having a dream house when you retire is really cool. And having it be tax deferred is an awesome strategy. So yeah. Tate, go ahead.
I love that. Now, just another, if you're not super familiar with the difference between traditional and Roth, I've got a great way to explain it. It's the difference between paying tax on the seed or paying tax on the crop. Right. So if you're in a traditional retirement account, you're going to buy seeds, right? And you're going to be able to write off those seeds. But then in the subsequent years, you know, the trees grow. And when you cash in on the crop, the IRS takes their money. But you got to write off the seeds way back then every year, right? So that's where you're putting your money into your IRA. You're getting to write off that money in the current year. In a Roth, you're buying the seeds with after-tax money. You don't get to write off the seeds. But when you cash in on the crop later on, you never owe taxes on all those gains.
That's correct. And I love the way you describe that, because I don't think that the Roth or the traditional is necessarily better. I think you really have to look at multiple things. A, your age. What do you think your rate of return is going to be? What is your tax bracket now and later on? And once you put all those together, that will help you determine which IRA is going to be better for you, traditional or Roth, or tax deferred or tax free. So,
excellent. All right, last question. Let's talk about fees real quick, because you know, if you're in a Fidelity or a Schwab, it's free to you because those brokerage houses make money on trading fees and on mutual funds and things like that. Let's talk briefly about how self-directed custodians make money. Yeah. You guys have to make money, and you don't make money on trading fees. So what do those fees look like? You know, for anybody listening, I can tell you firsthand that I've spoken with and worked with dozens of self-directed IRA companies, and all the fees are pretty much the same across the board. Let's sort of disclose all that so that nobody's surprised when they see that it actually costs money to set up an IRA with you.
That's correct. So no matter which custodian you go with, right, the fees are never going to make or break investment decisions. The Quest fees, we charge you $100 to set up the IRA, $125 to do an investment. And I'm going to go with the most expensive option here, being $350 a year to hold that investment. And that's the tax reporting. So I always tell people, if $350 a year is what's making or breaking your investment decisions, self-directed is not the best custodian for you, right? It's not. And you'll see one custodian be like, oh, well, we don't charge $350. We charge $175 every 6 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds good, man.
And this is something that we brought up in that video that's hosted on our website, is that, you know, I find that typically about $50,000 is sort of the magic number in an IRA, that it sort of, you kind of break even on those fees. Because if you wanted to invest, you know, we don't accept $25,000 usually in our syndication deals, but if you wanted to have an IRA that only had $25,000 in it, you know, those fees start kind of eating into the return. So the larger that account is, the smaller those fees are. As a ratio of the return profile.
Absolutely. So no one should be trying to sell you on it if you don't have enough money. If you're out there and you're listening to this and you're setting up your first retirement account and you're just trying to save money, don't go for self-directed custodian. The fees will eat you up. Fidelity's free.
Yep.
It really is. Okay. Yep. You can't invest in real estate, but that's okay. Right. You're just trying to save some money. But I think the 50,000 is a good mark right there. That's a good way.
Well, okay. What have you learned in the last 6 months that you didn't know about IRA investing, Derek? What's new knowledge that you are like, oh my God, I got to share this with you that I didn't know 6 months ago?
So I was at Congress back in December. My wife was pissed because that was Christmas time. And the Secure Act 2.0 passed. Now, if you guys don't know what this means, right, is the Secure Act 2.0, when it passed, actually was very pro-Roth retirement accounts in general. It added Roths to SEP IRAs and simple IRAs and 401ks and all these other things, right? And what was funny is this bill passed on December 26th and went active January 2nd.
Wow.
The crazy thing about this, not a single custodian out there knew how to deal with this. Like, oh, we suddenly have to change how we were running a lot of things, because if you had a SEP IRA, it was only tax deferred. Well, now you can have a SEP IRA and have it be tax deferred, or have it be a Roth SEP IRA. That was never an option.
Interesting.
Same with a simple. Same with a 401k. Same with extra and catch up. Well, suddenly, if you give all these banking institutions 3 days to figure out how to change their entire systems to allow for this, that was insane. And all of us as custodians together are just now getting to that point. So I thought it was really unique, because it's the first time for me to ever actually sit on the back office side, right? Guys, I read tax code. I do court cases and I talk to Congress. I'm not the dude in the back dealing with systems. So I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's pass this bill. And oh, system guys pissed at me. My bad.
Nice.
That's fine.
Gotta give some time to prep.
This was awesome. Really great. How do we sign up on Quest? How do we get in touch with you?
Couple different ways. A, reach out to Termite Capital or reach out to Spartan Investments. Either one of, you know, whether it's Tate or Ryan, they'll tell you exactly how to get in contact with me. You can always check us out on our website, questtrustcompany.com. If you want, you can email me directly, but spell my name right. My name's Derek Long, and it's DERECK.LONG@questtrust.com. Everyone spells my first name wrong. So I always tell people, reach out to Spartan, reach out to Turbine. Yeah. And they can definitely introduce you over to myself. And I'll gladly help anyone out there that's an ex-pilot or military. Like I said, I'm ex-military. I also used to fly private planes, you know. So
yeah,
I wasn't at your guys' level.
Yeah.
Right. But having a private pilot's license is pretty cool.
That's super cool.
Well, thanks so much, Derek. Well,
Derek, this has been fantastic. We'll link to the website in the show notes. Thank you so much for sharing the knowledge today. We really appreciate having you on.
Yeah. Thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care.